So ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the 14th annual CUNY's Asia American Film Festival. It is presented by the Asian American / Asian Research Institute, known as ARI. A-A-R-I. My name is Ryoya Trao, the chair of the film festival. I'm also a board member of ARI and a faculty member of the New York City College of Technology, CityTech. On behalf of the Institute, thank you all for joining us tonight's event. Many thanks also to CUNY Graduate Center for continuing to host the festival at this beautiful Martin Segal Theater. It's very generous of them. And to the ARI staff for helping to organize tonight's screening. And Anthony White here on camera. And William Tam, you saw him at the front desk. So since 2004, the Asian American ARI basically has screened and awarded student filmmakers throughout CUNY, involving key Asian production personnel or films focusing on Asian American or Asian theme. And close to $11,000 has been awarded over the last 14 years to 68 students throughout CUNY. That's a significant amount of money. And tonight we'll be adding to the list a brand new group of talented filmmakers, some of you. Not $11,000 at the time, but there'll be some awards. So regarding tonight's program, we'll be screening a total of 4 films, as you can see in the program, roughly about 1 hour. And after the screening, we'll be presenting the awards for best film and runner-up film in the categories of documentary and fictional films. Please note that only films that have met the festival's judging criteria will receive a prize, and that not all the categories will receive a runner-up prize. That's just how it is. So this year, we received films from students attending BMCC, Brooklyn College, City College, and Honda College. And if you didn't hear your CUNY campus listed, we hope that you submit a film next year so that we can expand the names of the CUNY schools on this. So, once again, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us, and let's start the screening. Thank you. Wow, thank you for the wonderful films. Wonderful. Yeah, thank you to all our student filmmakers. Now, before we go to the award announcement or ceremony, Jennifer Betitien is here today to talk about the upcoming exciting event.
Thank you so much for having me, and congratulations to all the filmmakers. Your films were amazing. So my name is Jennifer Beatty-Yen. I run the Asian American Film Lab, which is a not-for-profit. It's been around since 1998, and it's dedicated to the promotion and the support of gender and ethnic diversity in film and television. And every year we run a filmmaking competition called the 72-Hour Shootout. Some of you may know of it. And what we do is we try to utilize the shootout to bring faces, voices, and stories that are not typically heard by the mainstream media to the mainstream media. So we partner with ABC, we partner with NBC, we partner with Time Warner Cable, and we provide mentorships, screen tests, and other opportunities for the filmmakers who are so often silenced and so often hidden to be seen and heard. So if any of you are interested, we have a launch party on June 1st, at which time we'll announce the theme of this year's shootout, which I know, and it's very, very, very fun. So I think if any of you would like to join up, please come to the shootout launch party. It's here in New York. If you're not in New York, then no problem. We live stream it, so you can do it from anywhere in the world with Wi-Fi. So we would love to have any of you participate. Thank you so much.
That's an exciting event or project. Now the moment that we have been waiting for. The winner and runner-up recipients for the 2017 CUNY Asian American Film Festival. Prize awards for winner and runner-up recipients in each category are $200 and $100 respectively. And after receiving your award, please stay up here to the side so that we can take a photo together, group photo opportunity. And so I heard that there's one of the judges in the audience. True. Two.
Jennifer.
Yes, please come up here, please.
Hi guys, congratulations. Thank you for having me. My name is Patrick Chan. I'm a filmmaker based in New York City. Done this many years ago, so it's great seeing this, you know, coming up front in live. So congratulations again.
Okay, for the category of documentary film, this year we only have a best film prize. This film surpassed our scoring threshold. And because we have shown only one documentary today, so it was obvious. So the best documentary goes to Decoding Dark Matter. Well, congratulations. Now the category of narrative film, fictional film. Okay. The runner-up award goes to Powder Room. The winner of Best Fiction Film goes to Daya Textile Factory. And I would like to now also welcome our third fiction film screener to receive their certificate of appreciation and to join the rest of the winners for the Q&A sessions. Please come up here. You did the film, The Question Mark. Please come up here. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in congratulating all the winners and participants of the 2017 Asian American Film Festival. Congratulations to you all. All right. So, everybody can speak freely. Well, does anybody have any questions to these wonderful filmmakers? Yes.
I have a question for you, Crystal. I'd like to know more about the process behind the film. It seemed like there was a pretty big timeline. I'd love to see how the project evolved.
Sure. Yes.
Testing? Okay. So, yeah, I started filming in November 2015, mm-hmm. and I ended the shoot to December 2016, and I edited it from January of this year to about 2 weeks ago. I volunteered with the Audre Lorde Project, and I met Alok through the Audre Lorde Project, and once I saw their poetry and what they did, I was just so enamored, and I knew I had to do a story about them, and I was just so grateful that they let me. Yeah.
Yeah, guys, great job. And what was your inspiration for the project, each one of you guys?
So everybody has to go to the mic.
Hi, everyone. I really loved the Akira Kurosawa film. And so I really was inspired by the Rashomon story. So when we see three people giving their story about the one event, at the same time, we see we have a lot of questions and there is no answer. And I was really was trying to do it, isn't it, Rashomon? So yeah, it was my film. So thanks.
Yeah, I thought about Rashomon when I saw the film. Actually, true. Next.
Hi, I'm Mam, the director of Day at Textile Factory. I think this film is inspired by Nikki. She's the star of the film, and we came up with the idea together. I guess her aunt owns the factory that was in the movie, and that factory was like a large part of Nikki's childhood, growing up in like Queens, and she was like, I guess you can like say something. I mean, she just told me the story about like how she was as a kid, she would hang out in the factory, although it's like not a very like typical like, you know, kids place, but like she would have so much fun. And I was like, wow, we should make a film there. And we came up with the story. We saw this one woman in the factory who was the like inspiration for the woman in the film. And the idea just like came to us.
How was it like to act in that film?
I thought acting in the film was pretty natural. I didn't have a lot of lines, and I felt like my acting was pretty subdued the whole way. So I think I can improve on that, but I enjoyed it overall. It was a very natural setting for me to be in.
Right. Is it the real actual setting, actual location?
Yeah,
wow.
Location.
Wow.
Inspiration, right? Was the question? So I try to make films that tell the stories of marginalized people, people of color, different genders, all of that. Like, so I inspire to make films like that because I think it needs to be more of those in the world. And just shine a light on stories that are just not being told. Like, I've never seen that on my television, so I just put it there.
So basically, Padrum is like my post-puberty epiphany of like, the world is not really, like a lot of, especially nowadays, it's like very superficial. Like, we just follow on like, you know, the outside of the stuff, hence the Padrum stuff. But really, in a more personal note, it's more of like me, because I grew up in the Philippines, and like, most of our culture are mostly disenfranchised by Western and, you know, whatever the white man culture is. I'm not trying to be very, like, anti-colonialist, but the idea that my identity moving in here is sort of like, who the fuck am I? You know, like, oh, I'm sorry, excuse my French. You know, so it's like the idea of that, like, all this time growing up, I'm like, looking at this part of the world, I'm like, okay, this is the right thing. I don't know why, I just follow it. And then when the time came in where like I had this epiphany, you know, all of this stuff is not real. And that's like kind of came out of that. And that's it. That's you know, that's Padrum. Yeah.
My name is Matthew Deese. I have a production company called Truth Artist Productions. I worked with Kevin Arota on another film called Gone. I saw that he was really good at what he did. He brought me his idea for Powder Room. I thought that his story needed to be told. I was very fortunate to be able to work with him. And we got it done, which you saw. So, once again, congratulations, everybody.
Was it actually shot on film?
Yes.
Yeah, that's how it looked. Okay, all right. But edited on... But did you actually cut the film?
I had a DI and then digital intermedia together.
Right. Oh, okay. All right. Okay. For the documentary filmmaker, was there any difficulty following these characters, especially at the beginning? Because you're coming from a very different cultural background.
Not really. Not that there was, it's just that they're so colorful. All I had to do, what my job was to catch their magic and then edit it together. That's all I did. But they were just giving it to me, and I just caught it. That's it. Like, right?
Okay. How do they feel about this film after they're not really performing together?
Yeah. So they've seen the film recently. I haven't heard back as yet. I just kind of sent it to them, actually. And I sent it to Aloka. Aloka's in India performing right now. So they're on tour doing a lot of stuff, going to India, London, Fiji. So I haven't heard back as yet. And it just kind of got done. So I hope they like it. Yes. Yes. But they've seen clips and stuff. So they've
okay. What did your mother have to say about this film?
Ma, what do you feel about this film?
Oh, I think it's gorgeous. I couldn't have done it when I was your age.
Thank you, Mommy.
Wonderful. Yes.
You guys going to move forward with this project, meaning I guess admit to other film festivals or working on another project itself alone, and this is done? Like, what's the next move?
Okay.
Everybody.
Yeah. Well, me. I'm Chris.
Well, I'm sorry. You.
All right.
I like that. Okay. Right now, we're me. I'm producing for Truth Artist Productions. We're trying to put them together a pilot episode for, you know, that we're trying to sell into like major networks. It's basically my best buddies in like college. You know, this is our first step going out in the real world. And Matthew can tell more about it if you, you know.
I'm originally from North Carolina. I moved here after I got out of the Marine Corps. I started working security in a lot of clubs. They put me in South Brooklyn around a lot of Russians. I thought these people at first were idiots, but then after a while I realized they were actually very endearing and good people. It was just a lot of misunderstandings. And then through them, I was privy to other immigrant communities. And I felt like these communities were really good people, and that they came here and they had been doctors, lawyers, teachers, etc. And now they were home caregivers, and they were working in factories, and they were doing whatever they could to make it to get by. And so I created a show about Brighton Beach in the local area. And through Kevin, we've been able to develop it. And so soon we will film and then pitch it to major networks to hopefully get picked up. So that's our next project.
Probably some people would like to know, do you have any specific plans for distribution? Like how will you approach for the broadcasters?
Distribution, it's mostly like right now, it's having a proof of concept that we can shop around.
Okay, okay.
And if ever gets picked up, then great, then okay. They'll figure that out. Okay. But if not, or if you know, if all this efforts, nothing came about, then we're really pushing probably in like a web series form.
Mm-hmm. Right,
because
yeah.
I think it's in the niche of it, it's like, you know, it's you're kind of like realistic about it. Like, mm-hmm. If you say Brighton Beach, now a lot of people are like really familiar with Brighton Beach unless you're local. So, but you know, I think the me as a producer, not just me as Matt's friend, because it's Matt's baby, I think it's really compelling. And the writers that we have, the way it was written is really compelling. So, you know, hopefully, the next 5 years, it's out there in AMC or whatever. That'll be great.
Yeah, sounds good.
I did this film for my thesis project, so this is the first festival I've entered it in, so this is very successful. So I think I'll continue.
Yes.
Based on this.
Yeah, you should. You should.
yeah, we are going to submit to more festivals and next projects. Non-decided, but definitely making more.
So, to be honest, this film was actually my just a college project, and I didn't expect to send it to any film festival. And so, yeah, and probably I was really familiar with a good experience. It's my also first film festival, and for the next try, I'll try to like put more effort and try to better film. Thanks so much for the for the festival. It's also giving me this opportunity. And it was really amazing, and so I really enjoyed watching all the films. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good. A question for you. What were you thinking about when everybody was watching your film being screened?
It was a really amazing feeling, because when I watched my film, I actually just was looking around. People were thinking about it, so yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
I'm really nervous.
Good film. Yes.
I have a question for the makers of A Day at the Textile Factory. So many parts of the movie feel like almost like a documentary because you were shooting in an actual textile factory. And I was just wondering what that experience was like shooting in there. Because you're shooting like a fictional movie, but there's so many parts of it that feel so real. For example, the scenes where people are working, it feels like, you know, you were actually there. So I'm just curious what that experience was like.
Yeah, like as I said, the factory is owned by Nikki's aunt, and they were actually working when we were filming the movie because they couldn't afford to shut it down. And I mean, people are very cooperative. We were just using like a corner of a space or just walk around. We have very light crew, and yeah, they were really kind for letting us use the space. I really appreciate that. Yeah.
Did you want to act?
You know the place well, so.
Well, we were only using a little corner of it, so like everyone was continuing working in the background. So like everything that was happening in the background was completely like real. And that's all.
So, we like didn't direct anyone in the background. Like they just had to keep working and go about their.
So they're real people.
Yeah.
Oh wow. but there was a woman who made a face in the background. It's she not trained actress. When you were just getting the clothes.
Oh, that was my mom.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay. Oh, good actor. Yes.
For the powder room, I'm just curious because I noticed in certain scene, the dining scene, certain scene, even if some kind of focus on somewhat of colorism that has affected a lot of brown people across the world. I noticed that the darker shade, like Butler, he was like in the background, yes. And then he became very heroic.
That's far
towards the end. Because at first, as a person of color, I was like, when a girl went to bed with the guy and she touched the black skin, I'm like, oh, Lord, here we go. But then it was like, okay, I get it, and it was saved towards the end. So I'm like, why, as a person of color looking at it and what had to do with colorism in the fashion industry, I really didn't like the factory shots. I used to be a production person. But I was like, where is the positive part of being dark, you know? It's like,
well,
I was just happy that towards the end there was a darker shade that got him out of that world and brought him back. So just wanted to know, why did you decide to make the darker shade character?
Okay, cool. So you're asking why did I make a decision to use the waiter and the guy almost obsolete in the film.
Mm-hmm.
Well, back in the 1930s, especially if you notice, I mean, like, it's like a whole film school, like, boring stuff that you do in film classes, but, like, basically it's the idea of, like, back in the 1930s, all the silent films are generally, you know, are mostly the leading actors are white people, right? And the idea, and there's this notion back then, because the film is not as sensitive as now, that you have to put white powder on. So that's one part of the layer of, you know, if it's only like mostly like if you're a film geek, whatever, but the idea of putting powder on. So it's like the idea is that I think when I was making the film, I put myself into the shoes of like, who am I as a filmmaker? Like what does my voice matter? And do my voice matter in film or in the film world in general? And people like that, just because of your color, you don't matter, you know. Like that guy, I intentionally put him as a black guy because, like, that's what it is in like 1930s. Like, if you're a black guy, any person of color, you have no place in film. You have no voice whatsoever. That's the reason why it's a silent film. That's the reason why, in the part in where the guy, the main character, is putting powder on, basically going into this idea of that he has to belong to the main culture of film, which is dominantly white, which is, you know, film is so, you know, and that loses his voice. And that's, and for me, personal, more personal level, throughout my career or my ever since I decided to become a filmmaker, I always think that I always have to go through that path. Like, I always have to follow whatever, like, you know, Hollywood have done. And by just doing that, I felt like I've lost my voice. I felt like I've lost who I am as an artist and as a filmmaker. So that's why at the end of the film, I decided to, like, disorienting music, because at the time you get that awareness of, like, hey, you know, this is the real thing. And you got it all wrong all this time. So I don't know if that answered your question, but...
No, I did. My family's from Charleston, South Carolina, so I understand. So the certain thing, like, it's a good thing, because a lot of what I learned from my history is that the servants, if you didn't have the servants there, you wouldn't know what was really going on.
Yeah.
That's really what helped, you know, the abolitionists during the slave movement. It was because of servants.
Yeah.
The eavesdropping and listening. And therefore, to see that the servant towards the end kind of like freed him from his own kind of bondage at the time. With
right.
That. And I also like the Twilight Zone type of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
But a lot of that is like, you know, we take it with like great sensitivity. I just didn't put, hey, let's put a black guy there, and you know, because that's what they do. No, you know, I understand that. I understand where you guys are, but like that's just how it is, and how it is in the culture of film, especially 1930s film, and that's like part of the expression that I'm trying to make. You know, but you know, I get that. But thank you for the question.
So for the powder room, what kind of freedom do you think you had through creating a silent film? Digital freedom, expression.
Freedom of expression. Well, there's no sound. There's no dialogue, that's for sure. But I think
the freedom that I had for it was like, that's a good question.
I guess no restrictions.
I don't think there was a lot of restriction for this film.
Right, because like, there was no boom operator in the way. And
yeah, that's you know, that's, we don't have to worry about that. I think the only restriction that we had is just like it took us like 6 months before we got the footage back from the lab. Because they lost the footage.
Oh, wow.
So it's crazy, but you know, it took me a while to finish the film. But aside from that, the money helped, Matthew helped me a lot in putting it together because it's really expensive.
Oh, so he was the one with the money.
Yeah, he put the money. You know, he's my guy. And he's very generous, and like I'm thankful for that. That he's just like, dude, do what you do. Here's the money.
Oh, well.
Just give me a film that you really
need. And that's what I need too. So, all right. Was there any difficulty, many of you, finding locations? Maybe the factory, you already had the location, but all the other people deciding the locations, finding the locations. Did you go through any difficulties?
Oops. With the permits, actually, yeah. I had to film Gorilla a little bit. We had to re-get the permits or something like that.
Actually, the exterior prints, we got a permit, we didn't use it, and then we just like, hey, damn it, let's just shoot it.
Where was the bedroom?
The bedroom is in Brooklyn College, it's in the TV.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
The location?
Yeah. The beach scene, was it already warm when your actor had to go into the ocean? Was it still cold?
It was really difficult to ask my friend. He really refused, and it was on the end of the fall. It was really cold, and I said, just go ahead the first time, and the first time was not good, and like he tried a couple times, so yeah. It was really good. It was about the location, and Tulsa, I shoot in his apartment, so it wouldn't have been a problem. What else? And the interview scene, I also shoot on the campus, college campus, so I didn't have any problems.
Oh, okay, oh, good. All right. So it sounds like everybody's filming went well in many ways. Is everyone nodding? Yes. All right. Any more questions from the audience?
How long did your productions take? You already answered that question, but for each of you.
Production, so shooting, we took 3 days and then one extra day for reshoots. And then post-production, we took about 2 months, I would say. Yeah.
Oh, wow, that's good. You must have a good plan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because sometimes it takes forever to make a film like this. So,
yeah.
Okay.
The shooting take was only 2 days, and editing took me like only 1 day to set it, so yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's impressive.
So I wrote the script by the end of August, early September. We started filming mid-October. We finished, we only did 3 days and then one pickup day. And we officially finished editing since because of the delays from the lab, August 2016.
Yeah, nowadays it's difficult to find the film lab to process film. Did you shoot in 16mm film? Okay. Did you have to send your film to California? Or was it in New York?
The one in Massachusetts. That's in the lab.
Oh, wow. And they lost it and they found it.
We sent out two big deals. They lost the other one.
Yeah, it's good that.
No. but it took them a while because apparently they just put it whatever. They don't have that much. I mean, yeah, you don't have much choice, which is a shame.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
Well, what kind of equipment did the rest of the teams use?
Okay. All right.
So I'm a BMC student, Bureau of Manhattan Community College, and so I just rent all the equipments. There was only the camera problem, and my friend, he is the BMCC, 2.5K, so yeah. So I just asked him help, and yeah. So we just rented all of them from our campus. So we don't have
of which equipment?
So BMCC actually has a film department.
Film department, yeah. So we can just take like for the 3 days a look with. So lighting, tripod, so lenses, so everything. Yeah.
Wow. What kind of lenses did you use?
That was 18 and 55 millimeters. The other was, I'm not sure about it. I think it's 85 millimeters. So
from Canon?
It's Canon lens, yeah, a little bit.
Okay.
So
right.
You can just use Canon lenses for the, all the Canon lenses for the BMCC. So.
Okay. Oh, must be a nice program.
Sorry.
It's probably a very good program.
Yeah, it's funny because I was trying to use the other camera that I already have, and then I went to my friend Chen's place to like borrow some lighting kits, and he's like, you should use this better camera. And then I used and ended up using this Sony A7S2, I think that was the camera, and with a very good zoom lens, so we didn't end up wasting time changing the lens, and the camera is beautiful. This version, I wish it's more color graded, but yeah, the colors are beautiful in that camera.
Okay.
I use a Canon 70D.
Uh-huh.
And I have that at home, so.
Uh-huh. Okay, very good. But did you record the audio separately?
Yes, on a Zoom.
Zoom, okay.
A Zoom, and then I just edited it.
And how big was your crew?
It was just me.
Wow.
Yeah, I filmed everything,
wow.
Edited everything.
Wow.
I didn't have anything.
What a accomplishment.
Released the old Bolex camera, the H16.
A Bolex, oh wow.
The one you cranked.
Right. Uh-huh. Oh, good. Any questions, any comments? Yes.
What was the biggest challenge that you had to overcome during this process?
Good question.
Being a crew of one, it was very difficult for me to film and record audio at the same time. So it's like a lot of time just placing the zoom and then just hoping it caught. Sometimes it didn't catch, which is why I have a sound editor at the end. So she saved me. Thank you, Sam.
Oh, good. In any order.
It's just like a lot of stuff that... There's a long list, but basically it's like a lot of stuff that would hinder, let's say, the production designer is not showing up, you know, like, or whatever, because, you know, they just, for some reason, they cannot make it. And a lot of that stuff you have to, you know, that I had to come up with my own and basically fill in their shoes. So that's basically the challenge, like, people not showing up.
I guess... for this shooting of our film, I would say the biggest challenge is like in the editing process, how, you know, figure out how, like what shots are absolutely necessary, what shots are excessive, and what makes the most sense, and making changes from the script. I guess that's the most rewarding and most challenging phase for me personally. What about you?
I wasn't part of the editing process, so I didn't have any of those challenges, but while we were on set, it was sort of difficult to be able to like work around everyone else working in the factory without hindering their work. Like, we weren't allowed to turn off certain lights, or like we weren't allowed to like open windows and such. So yeah, that was probably the biggest challenge. We had to accommodate for all of that.
Mm-hmm. You said you had 3 shooting dates and 1 day for pickup shots. Mm-hmm. How much time did you spend before you decided to do some pickup shots? You must have reviewed.
Good question. Yeah, that was after editing, actually. We had a rough cut. we had actually 2 drafts of the editing, and then we realized it wasn't, so a lot of the footage of people working are actually from the pickup shoot. That was mainly the goal, because we thought that this movie is very plot driven, and adding some, you know, like documentary style footage would add to the dimension of the world being there, because it wasn't just about, you know, this girl and her world, it's also about the world she's living in, and that's a large part of who she is and what shapes her identity. And yeah, I think that pickup shoot was really adding to the editing.
Okay, good.
So for me, the challenge was the weather, because the first day really was sunny day, sunshine, and the second day was really kind of cloudy, windy, and really was difficult when I started editing because it just didn't match, and it took me just like a couple hours.
All right. Wonderful. I think this was a great session with the filmmakers, and congratulations again to all the filmmakers. And thank you to everyone for coming to this exciting festival. This was the 14th annual Asian American Film Festival. And on behalf of the ARI, Asian Research Institute, have a wonderful summer, and we look forward to more fantastic films for next year's film festival. And good night, and have a great Memorial Day weekend. Thank you very much.